Hello, can we please talk about the return of the UFC to Fight Island this week? Obviously, we've had a bit of a break from fights. It's been a bit boring, hasn't it? It's like we haven't had any fights to talk about, but we've got fights to talk about this week. Obviously, I already recapped all of my terrible bets from the last Stephen Thompson versus Jeff Neal on the last UFC event of the year. So we've already been through how terrible those bets were. So let's just get straight into the news this week. Well, one of the biggest things in the news really has been the potential return of one Mr. Nate Diaz. Now, Dana White has come out and said that he is looking to do something with Nate Diaz this year in 2021. He hasn't actually specified what that fight maybe. Now, I think that really this one's got a bit lightweight. I mean, he has had a few fights at welterweight, but really, Nate Diaz is a lightweight fighter. The best weight for him is 155 pounds. I think that he knows it. Everybody knows it. So I've looked at a few fights that they could make at lightweight. There is a couple at welterweight as well, that just because, you know, Nate Diaz, he's no stranger to welterweight either. He's not a small guy. Now this one, Dana says that it's off the cards, but Tony Ferguson, surely Tony Ferguson, that's a good fight for Nate Diaz, right? That'd be a fun one for him to come back to, because I mean, it's a big name. That would be a headline of UFC, you know, either a fight night, it would headline a fight night, probably be a co-main on a numbered event, but who knows, you know, that's a fight that people will pay to see, is what I'm saying. And you know what? I don't think that that's an unwinnable fight for Nate Diaz. Like Tony Ferguson, I like Tony Ferguson, but I do think that I bought into it. I was as guilty as anybody else, but I do feel like when you look at who he's actually beaten versus who's been, you know, getting his number lately, I think at the highest level of competition, it has to be said he is starting to struggle. And whether that be his age, he's 36 now, or that maybe he just wasn't as good as everybody thought he was. So it'd be a chance for Tony Ferguson to bounce back, because a big win over Nate Diaz, you know, that's a feather in anyone's cap, just because Nate Diaz is a huge name in his own right. I think that is the fight to make. Now, Dana White insists that it isn't Tony Ferguson, but come on. You know, who are you kidding, Dana? Joey, don't bullshit a bullshitter. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson got a good win in his last outing in the last UFC event of the year against Jeff Neal. And despite winning his last fight, he's actually dropped in the rankings, which is hilarious. I love that. That's so fun. I mean, it's not funny for Stephen Thompson, obviously, but I mean, it's pretty funny to just watch him win a fight and then slip down in the rankings. That's just, it just shows how much the rankings actually mean. It's like they're basically meaningless. But Stephen Thompson, he's going to be looking for a big name fight. You could make that against Nate Diaz. I don't think it'd sell that well, though, because the problem with Stephen Thompson is that he's kind of too nice. You need somebody who's... To get the best out of Nate Diaz, to get the best viewing numbers out of Nate Diaz, you need somebody who is going to be a little bit contentious with him, who's going to, you know, to be a little bit of a... Because you want the sound bites, you want the press conferences, you want all of it, don't you? I don't think you would get that with Stephen Thompson. So as much as, yeah, they could make that fight, I don't think it makes sense. Jorge Masvidal, obviously they fought for the BMF title last year. It got stopped, you know, it was a pretty bad cut. I don't think it was an unfair stoppage. I do not think that it was going to change the outcome of the fight. I think Jorge Masvidal was running away with it, but you never know. It wasn't like an exactly a super clean victory, so I'm sure Jorge Masvidal would like to put it beyond all doubt, and also Nate Diaz would like to get that one back. So that makes sense to bring him back for, although Jorge Masvidal is looking to try and get himself back into the UFC welterweight title picture. And I don't think that this is necessarily the way to do it, because obviously that would be at welterweight as well. So that destroys my theory of Nate Diaz going back down to lightweight, of course. But I would watch that fight again. I think it was a fun fight the first time. I think it would be a fun fight the second time. Do I think the result would be different? No, I don't. I think Masvidal probably has Nate's number there. Also, you've got to think about it. When you hear the name Nate Diaz, the name Conor McGregor comes shortly after that, you know? So, because obviously they had, you know, it didn't derail the hype train. If anything, it gave him more hype. McGregor took a fight on short notice the first time they fought, and Nate Diaz submitted him, and it was a fantastic performance from Nate Diaz. He came in as a big underdog. You know, it's where he got that cool soundbite, surprise, motherfuckers, you know, that iconic moment in mixed martial arts. And then, of course, they had the rematch, which was bigger and better in every way. And it was just a fantastic fight. I'd watch those two fight every week because it was an outstanding fight. At the end of it, I didn't really know who had won. You know, I thought I was a bit biased, you know, because I had money on Nate Diaz, so I was leaning towards Nate Diaz 3-2. But obviously, I think they gave it to McGregor 3-2 in the end, and it was a very close fight. Very close fight. They need to do that third fight. I don't think it's going to be right now, and I'll tell you why. Because right now, Conor McGregor is still in the kind of title picture, there or thereabouts. You know, if he's fighting Dustin Poirier, who was recently in a title fight, and then you've got to be looking at Khabib Nurmagomedov, potential retirement, which opens up the title. And then you've got you know, the winner of Dan Hooker and Michael Chandler is probably going to, you know, worm their way into there. But all those guys are in the mix. However, obviously next weekend you've got Conor McGregor taking on Dustin Poirier. If he was to lose that fight, I think the trilogy makes sense. The trilogy makes sense then. I think they would make that fight. I think they would make the trilogy bout. Because McGregor's not going to be around forever, and neither is Nate Diaz. They need to shit or get off the pot if they want to do this trilogy fight. But I think it only happens this year if McGregor loses to Dustin Poirier, which I think is actually unlikely. But, you know, Dustin's a hell of a fighter, so it's not that unlikely, you know? And stylistically, this is just a bit of a pipe dream one, because you've got Robbie Lawler, welterweight. He's on his way out because, I mean, come on, he's been fighting forever. You know, the dude is the reason I started watching, you know, the UFC in the first place. The first fight I ever watched was Robbie Lawler against Tiki. And that was an outstanding fight. When I got to meet Robbie Lawler, I said to him, you know, you're the first fight I ever watched when you smacked a bit of Tiki's eyebrow out, it was missing. And he was like, yeah, that was a long time ago. He's, you know, got a good memory, but yeah, whatever. You know, I was starstruck. What can I say? You know, it was, and Robbie Lawler, he's an outstanding fighter. He's one of those fighters. In his last couple of fights, he hasn't looked like the Robbie Lawler that I know. Do you know what I mean? He's looked very much like he's not really wanting to pull the trigger, which is very strange for Robbie. But, you know, that might be just, you know, the people he's been against were just able to hit him enough to stop him from pulling the trigger. But either way, that stylistically, a fight between Nate Diaz and Robbie Lawler would be a whole lot of fun. Nate Diaz isn't currently ranked at welterweight. You know, Robbie Lawler's ranked, what, 14th, I think? I might be wrong there. But I think Robbie Lawler and Nate Diaz would be a fun fight. And it's a fight that would sell. Because they're both kind of, no, the same mentality. They will throw down. They will go forward. They will throw down. That would be a hell of a fight. Be a hell of a fight. I think they should make that one. And, you know, obviously you've also got, you know, maybe the winner of Michael Chandler and Dan Hooker, you know, the winner of that one. But I think either one of those guys, with respect to Nate Diaz, I think either one of those guys would beat Nate at this point, because Nate is awesome. And I love watching him fight. But there are certain guys who are just in that real top echelon at lightweight that are just absolute killers. But it would be a fun fight nonetheless. Also, I can't mention big fights at lightweight without mentioning the Irish Dragon, Paul Felder. Love that dude. Got so much respect for him. He will come out and he will fight anybody. And the guy deserves a big fight. I think stylistically, again, Paul Felder against Nate Diaz would be so fun. It would be a really fun fight to watch. Would it necessarily be the blockbuster event that would entice Nate Diaz back into the octagon? Probably not. I think, you know, maybe Felder gets a few more wins and puts himself right into title contention. Nate Diaz would probably come back for that, but I don't see that happening in the time frame that would be required for Nate Diaz for a Nate Diaz comeback fight. So I just don't see that one happening, as much as I would love to see it, because I think that's a winnable fight for both of those guys. And I think Paul Felder just deserves a big fight. So yeah, Nate Diaz looking for a fight. That's you know, it's not Khamzat Chimaev looking for a fight anymore. It is Nate Diaz looking for a fight. So yeah, moving on to like the rest of the news, we've got USADA announcing something that is not news. Well, basically it was on BJPen.com. BJ Penn are a bit shit, really. They've like launched this thing as news apparently, but it's not, because it's basically the whole USADA thing saying that, you know, oh, USADA will no longer punish athletes for marijuana use, right? So that's per BJPen.com, as you can see there. Sugar Sean O'Malley smoking a big old blunt or doob or whatever. And you've got UFC USADA program. When you actually read it, it's exactly what their policy has been for some time. So, not news, guys. BJPen.com, pick your ideas up. But biggest news, fight announcement. This one I can't wait for, because here at the Burt Locker, we love a heavyweight fight. And would you look who they've matched up at heavyweight for March 13th, 2021. This is according to MMA Unhinged. Jairzinho Rozenstruik versus Cyril Gane. I called him Gane. Gane. G-A-N-E. He's that French fella who clocked Junior De Santos into oblivion, but apparently with an elbow to the back of the head. It was kind of to the back of the head. Was it changing the way that fight was going if it wasn't to the back of the head? I don't know. I think that De Santos is clutching at straws there, but look at those two. Look at them. Look at the state of them. That's a heavyweight fight. God damn, that's going to be fun. Oh, I can't wait to just throw money away on that fight by betting on the wrong... But whatever outcome, that is fireworks, because they're two stand-up fighters. They're two excellent kickboxers, and they're both huge, and they're both scary. And yeah, I can't wait for that. That's going to be absolutely fantastic. Watch this space. March 13th is not that far away. March 13th, guys. Jairzinho Rozenstruik versus Cyril Gane. What can I say? I can't wait for that one. I think that... Oh, who would I take in that one? Rozenstruik. I think Rozenstruik is grossly underestimated. I think he's a lot better than he came out looking in... I think he just got caught against Ngannou. But yeah, I like Rozenstruik. I think Rozenstruik... I haven't seen enough of Cyril Gane yet. Gane did look great against De Santos, though. But I mean, I don't know. Flip a coin. Rozenstruik. Rozenstruik, because I've just seen him be an absolute savage, not saying that Cyril Gane isn't. The real winner in that fight is the fans, guys, is the fans and old Bert, who loves a heavyweight fight. So, yeah, that's going to be a good one. And the other thing that's come up this week is in an interview with Bloody Elbow, because obviously I thought I'd mention this because Max Holloway is obviously in the main event this weekend. And he's come out and said in this interview with Bloody Elbow that he believes that 80 to 90% of the world thought he beat Volkanovski in the second fight. And to that, I say, based on what, Max? Did you take a survey? Did you? You take a survey of the entire world, did you? To come out with... Where are you plucking those numbers from, fella? I mean, come on now. It's like, I really like Max Holloway, but I really hate it when they're just like, oh, yeah, I won that fight. It's like, no, you didn't. You didn't do enough to make it... it was a close fight. And if you thought you won so convincingly, it wasn't convincing for either party. But me personally, I thought it could have been a draw, the second fight, in which case Volkanovski retains his title anyway. So the point is moot, isn't it? He still wouldn't have his belt. And yeah, I don't think Max did enough to really convincingly show that he was better than Volkanovski on that night. I've watched the fight a few times. And yeah, for him to kind of say, you know, that 80 to 90% of the world believes he thought he won, I don't think that that's strictly true. He's probably just, I mean, he's probably in a bit of an echo chamber there with all his fans telling him that they thought he won, which is fair, do you know what I mean? And if you're a fighter, you have to believe that, you know, there was a reason that you lost and that you really won and whatever else. But I mean, don't speak for 80 to 90% of the world, buddy, you know? Because I thought the fight was very close. I thought that it was a draw, maybe. But I don't think that there was any kind of robbery in that fight. So, Max, hopefully you just kind of, you know, you're trying to talk yourself up. I get it. But, yeah, 80 to 90% of the world, I don't think that's accurate. I really don't. I think I've seen an awful lot of people that think that Volkanovski legitimately did win that fight. And you know what? He did win that fight because facts are facts. It was a close fight. The judges gave him the nod on the night. Volkanovski won. Boom. Done. 80-90% of the world. Fuck off. So troll of the week this week. Okay. It's been a bit thin on the ground for trolls of the week, right? This one, it did make me laugh, right? And because obviously Connor's son is 4 years old now, and he looks fucking gigantic for a four-year-old. It's like, I mean, Connor's crouching down, but still, he's already been on the mats. He's started training like martial arts like for a long time. I think in, you know, in 15 years we could see Conor McGregor's kid making some real waves in mixed martial arts or even boxing, you know, because if you're training from that young and you've got the kind of lineage that Conor McGregor offers. This one is credit to Kurt MMA, by the way. Kurt MMA, thank you very much. This looks, it just made me laugh because what they've said here is that Conor McGregor's son isn't even four yet and he started training martial arts. What's more impressive is that he's already ranked higher than Dylan Danis, his last opponent. Which is true, actually, which is probably true, because I don't think, has Danis ever fought anyone that's ranked? He just seems to be fighting these like tin cans and running after pickup trucks with YouTubers in. That's all Dylan Danis seems to do at the moment. But yeah, that's a good troll, solid. I enjoyed that one. And the next one, because it was so thin on the ground, I decided to bring up a classic Chael Sonnen troll, because Chael Sonnen was the best at trolling, in my opinion, and this one is just pure poetry, right? So it's brought up on the screen here. This is when he was going to go fight Wanderlei Silva. Like, I think Wanderlei Silva tried to threaten him. He's like, listen, Wanderlei, I will do a home invasion on you. I will cut the power to your house, and the next thing you'll hear is me climbing up your stairs in a pair of night vision goggles I bought in the back of Soldier of Fortune magazine. I'll pick the lock to your master room door. I'll take a picture of you in bed with the Nogueira brothers working on your jiu-jitsu. I'll take said quote-unquote photograph, post it at dorksfrombrazil.com. Password not required. Username not required. That, Wanderlei, is how you threaten someone, dummy. And, I don't think that was a terrible Chael impression. I think that went pretty well. But yeah, Chael Sonnen, he was the king of like of trolling people. And yeah, I think the sport is, it's not as fun without him in it. I mean, he has happily retired now. And you know, I think he did so much for the sport. Chael Sonnen doesn't get nearly the respect that he deserves. Love his podcast as well. But yeah, that's it. That always makes me smile. You know, it's, and then we've got one more here. This one is courtesy of The Strangle Squad. See, I always see these on basically on the UFC Facebook pages that I go through. This one is funny because it's that dude from one of the Avenger films. But yeah, he's just like standing there realizing it's like, because I am guilty of this as well. This here, I am very, very much guilty of it. When I've been defending my favorite fighter all day, usually Michael Bisping, to be fair, because I don't think he gets the credit that he deserves sometimes. But yeah, when you realize you've spent all day arguing with a stranger online and defending your favorite fighter, maybe I am a nut hugger. You know, it gave me the realization that I probably am, to be fair, because, yeah, it's a tough one because, like I said, you see someone talking shit to, you know, on one of your favorite fighters, you have to step in. You have to step in. And sometimes, you know, it's like with the whole lockdowns going on, I haven't got an awful lot better to do. So I'll get drawn in, which is never a good thing. But yeah, so anyway, moving on to the fights this week. What I'm going to do is I'm going to cover three of the fights that that I'm really looking forward to on tonight's fight card, which is Saturday the 16th. The odds for the knockouts and things like that, for the methods of victories, are not up on Skybet yet for the Wednesday night card. So what I'm going to do is do a very quick video on Tuesday, just getting my picks in there, because I already know what I'm going to pick for those fights, but I'll go into those in more detail on Tuesday night. But let's start off with the heavyweights. We love the heavyweights here at the Burt Locker, right? So Carlos Felipe is taking on Justin Badman Taffer. Now, Taffer, he's a big lump from New Zealand, right? He's a Mark Hunt-esque type of fighter. He bloody loves a knockout. receiving or giving, preferably giving the knockout. Well, I mean, I'd hazard a guess that he would prefer to be knocking people out than being knocked out himself. But it seems to go either way for him. He can either get knocked out devastatingly or knock someone out devastatingly. Felipe is also a big lump. He loves a decision, though. He bloody loves a decision. Obviously, all your odds are up here. He loves a decision, either winning or losing. He beat De Castro, who knocked out Taffer. MMA math doesn't actually work, so it's actually fucking meaningless. So, I am going to take Taffer in this one. I'm torn between the knockout or the decision, just because Felipe bloody loves losing a decision. He's durable. He's a durable guy. He's a big guy. Durable as hell. But Taffer should have a slight edge in the conditioning. 7.50 on the decision is intriguing, actually. That's not a bad price, to be fair, for the decision. Because that could happen. But you know what? Gun to my head, I'm taking the knockout. Taffer by knockout. They're heavyweights. They've got tiny gloves on. Taffer by knockout. Terrible bet. But yeah, that's going to be a good one to get. Oh, it's on the prelims, that one. So make sure you tune into the prelims to watch the two big guys smashing each other in the face. And also, you have got the return of the hype train that is Jaquan Buckley. Let's get these guys on here. He's taking on Alessio De Chirico, who's the Italian fella. He's not the most... I'll be honest, not Buckley's a heavy favourite in this one. Well, I say heavy. He's not the biggest favourite I've ever seen. But Buckley's got a lot of hype after him, after that spinning mule kick KO a couple of months back. If you haven't seen that, there are GIFs all over the place. Just go back and watch. Just type in Jaquan Buckley KO, and it will be absolutely the first thing that comes up. So I do think it's most likely Buckley, he is the favourite for a reason. And I just think that, I don't think there's really going to be any surprises here. So you've got all the odds up here. He is the favourite, and he's the favourite by KO as well. And, let's just find the odds here. I don't know why I haven't got them up. I do apologise. Technical difficulties. Let's have a look. There we go. Okay, right. So yeah, we've got the 1.36 favorite. That's quite a heavy favorite, to be fair. And De Chirico is quite a heavy underdog, and it's for a reason. Look at the differences in between them in stature. Obviously, it's not a bodybuilding contest, but if it was, Buckley would have already won. The KO is only 2-1, plus 2. It's not even really worth betting on Buckley, but I am going to take Buckley in this one regardless, because he is most likely to win. Alessio, he's coming off 3 decision losses. So his back's against the wall. And I don't think that that's going to happen here. Do you know what I mean? He's not going to lose another decision because he's going to get knocked the fuck out. That's probably what's going to happen. So, yeah, Buckley by knockout. Boom. Terrible bet. You're only getting 2s on that as well, so that is a terrible bet, just purely because the odds are absolutely crap-ola. So then we're going to move on to the co-main event. The co-main event, it's two... I call them legends. They are legends of the sport. They're legends. You've got Matt the Immortal Brown taking on Carlos Condit, and we'll have the odds up here. So we've got Condit coming in at slight favourite, the 1.53 to win. You've got Matt Brown, 2.38. Now, before I saw the odds, I fancied Matt Brown in this one, purely because, Condit came back recently, but I don't think he looked particularly good against Court McGee. I don't think you could argue that he looked outstanding. Now, Matt Brown, he's actually been on, if you look at his record, he's actually been on a fairly good run of form lately. If he's not fighting a young up-and-comer, that young up-and-comer, Baser, he obviously knocked him out. But Matt Brown shouldn't be fighting those kind of guys anymore. And with respect, Carlos Condit is not a young up-and-comer anymore. He's getting up there. He's making his second or third run in the UFC. He was out for a while, and now he's come back. He came back against Court McGee. I thought he got the decision, but I don't think he looked really, really spectacularly good. And against similar older fighters, people in his bracket, Matt Brown has been on a tear. He knocked out both Sanchez and Ben Saunders. And so for that reason, I'm going with Brown by KO. And when you look at the odds there, plus 450, for the KO, that's pretty fucking nice. That is a bet that I can get behind. I am definitely having a go on that. Yeah, terrible bet. That's so Matt Brown by knockout plus 4.50. bloody love that bet. That is fantastic. And then we've got Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar. Again, I don't really see any huge surprises happening in this one. Max Holloway is bloody good. You know what I mean? Despite his lack of survey taking abilities, he's a bloody excellent fighter. He lost two close decisions to Volkanovski lately, and that's about it. But other than that, he's been, he's more or less untouchable. And if you look at just the level of competition that Kattar has faced, I just don't feel like it's quite on that level. So Holloway, he's actually, Joe, when you look at the one I like here is the submission for Holloway. And the reason for that is because he does like to grab a neck and a guillotine. He's caught a couple of people with it. I believe he caught Cub Swanson with it, actually. This is quite a while back. He hasn't submitted anybody in quite a while. But I do think that Kattar, he's not going to get the better of the stand-up. So I think that there's a good chance that he actually tries to get the... I think that there's a good chance that he possibly tries to go for a takedown. And at that point, Max could very easily just grab his neck and then happy days for Max. So I'm going to go with Max Holloway by submission there. And I think it's going to be a later one. I think there's a good chance that Max looks like the Max Holloway that we kind of expected against, against Volkanovski. Max lost those two fights to Volkanovski, but Volkanovski has now proved that he is the best in the world. So, Joe, and there's no shame there. I'm sure that Max Holloway will probably make it. He's not even old. He's like, 28 years old? And I just feel like he's probably going to make his way back to the title at some point. And, yeah, fair play to him. I think that, with respect, I don't think Kattar has really fought anybody that's quite on the level of either Volkanovski or even Max Holloway. He hasn't actually fought any of those kind of people. And yeah, so because Kattar, obviously he got a decision win against Ige. It was a good fight, and then he knocked out Jeremy Stephens. But with respect, Jeremy Stephens can hardly be put into the bracket of your Volkanovskis and your Max Holloways. Who hasn't knocked out Jeremy Stephens lately? I really like Jeremy Stephens. I love his style of fighting, but he's always like one step forward, two steps back with that guy. He tends to get smashed by these young up and comers. But yeah, I don't see it going any other way than Max Holloway winning. But I will make this bet terrible by specifying that Holloway will win by submission and it will be a guillotine choke. Now, just a submission is plus 13. That's fine by me. I am going for that one. Now, for the real terrible bet, what I've done here is I have put all those predictions, rolled them up into a ball. And what do you have then? You have a fucking terrible bet that you should never put on in a million years because you will definitely lose money 100% of the time. But what if? Because if you put Taffa by knockout, Buckley by knockout, Matt Brown by knockout, that's knockout/TKO, and then Max Holloway by submission, Boom. 409.50. I am having a go on that all day. That's always worth a quid. Boom. Lovely. Lovely stuff. Either way, it is great to have the fights back. I'm going to do a little bonus episode on Tuesday just to go into what I think is going to happen in the Munir Laziz Wally Alves fight and the main event with Neil Magny and Michael Chiesa. And if you enjoy this content, please give me a like, give me a subscribe, because, you know, it's just... it'll make me feel better, if nothing else. And yeah, so until next week, well, until Tuesday, keep those odds long and those bets terrible.